Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can reach us through WCTCAM or RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Darned good.
I am as well, and I would like to start off today talking about a quote that I read in the paper that it's an overall great thing, but there's just one ridiculous quote that
I
want to...
You still read newspapers?
I do. I'm very old-fashioned. I do it while sitting in front of my fireplace with a corncob pipe. All right, so there was an article...
Kind of the way I read them, too.
There was an article in the Star-Ledger recently about home winemaking, and I want to tell you something. I think home winemaking is great, and I think the places that are opening up to facilitate people making their own wine...
Absolutely.
I think it's terrific, and I think that... When you make home wine, listen, I judged for 3 years when T.J. Fodoraro was a bureau chief and the wine writer for the Star-Ledger, I judged the New Jersey home winemaking competition, hundreds and hundreds of home wine submissions. Not a one of them was what would have been commercially called anything more than an inoffensive bottle of wine.
Okay? Yeah, but that's okay.
It's fine. It's completely fine, and it's great. And you know what? If you made it and you give it to your friends, and I've had friends give me bottles of wine, and I enjoy them, right? But there's a difference between, you know, great bottles of wine that professional winemakers and vineyard owners make and what you can make at home. But I love what it teaches people about the winemaking process. It helps them to become better judges of commercial wines. And there was this article in the Ledger talked about a couple of places that are doing very well. One is called Vintner's Circle. There are several of them. It's a winemaking venture here in New Jersey. And it's a new kind of winemaking venture, I'm quoting. Instead of waiting for freshly harvested grapes from California each fall, enophiles can craft smaller batches of wines at any time of the year because they're made from pre-pressed juices from vineyards all over the world. Now, I think that's really cool, and I think that's great. But realize that if you're making shelf-stable pasteurized juice into wine, that's really very different from making wine from grapes.
Almost never does Welch's make a really good wine.
Yeah, you know, that's really just, I guess it's interesting to look at the process, but, you know, what makes great wines great is sort of where they come from and how the grapes are handled, and it goes right to wine. Shelf-stable grape juice that you make into wine is not ever going to be great wine.
Well, plus, what's the point of that? What's the point of taking a box of grape juice that you don't know where it comes from or even necessarily what variety of grape it is, and... You put it in a barrel and you add some sulfur and you add some yeast and you wait for it to... I don't know. What's the point in that? Are you really making wine or are you mixing a box cake?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Grapes are alive. And the wine, as we make the wine, that whole winemaking process is managing a live thing. And there are thousands of processes going on with thousands of components happening in a thousand different ways, and that's part of what makes winemaking so great. It's not about a shelf-stable juice, and I've heard this guy say this before, and I think it's just crazy. Let me read. At Vintner's Circle, there are dozens of varieties and blends from which to choose, from full-bodied reds like Barolos and Super Tuscans. Those aren't grapes. Barolo's a place, and the grape is Nebbiolo, but whatever. You know, this is, you know,
right.
As long as we keep it simple, who cares?
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Barolo. I made a Barolo. Great, terrific. To chuggable refreshment wines like pomegranate Zinfandel and white cranberry Pinot Gris. Okay, fun. You know, fun stuff, but along the lines of making a popsicle, along the lines of, you know, you made your own Pop-Tart, congratulations, you didn't really bake a cake, you know? But here's where I have the problem, and I had a conversation with this guy about that. For a little more money, The store can procure premium grape juice from well-known vineyards like Stag's Leap in Napa Valley that Vintner's Circle corporate owner David Schmeissel promises will produce wine indistinguishable from the winery's own labels.
Ooh.
I'm sorry. If you have a palate made of wood, it will be indistinguishable from Stag's Leap.
I guess you could say that's like getting into a professional race car and thinking that you would be a professional race car driver.
No, that's like getting into a Honda painted like a professional race car and thinking that you're going to win a race somehow. This guy has said this before in public, and look, I think home winemaking is great. I think his business is great. I think you should go and make wine and learn all the complexities that go. I'm sorry, and learn some of the complexities that go into it. But winemaking, as practiced by professionals that make really great wine, are about taking when to harvest the grapes is one of the most important decisions you can make. And then you run with those grapes from the vineyard into the press, and you press them very carefully in a temperature-controlled way over a certain period of time, and it's just not possible to recreate that 3,000 miles from the source of the vineyard.
And please don't think that, because I do think that some people think this, that you're going to buy grapes from Stag Leap Vineyard and make it into 20 cases of wine or 25 cases of wine, and you're going to save $25 a bottle because you don't have to pay $50 a bottle for Stag's Leap wine. You can just make it exactly. You can make it yourself.
It's not the same.
It's not the same product. It's got none of the same nuance that I mean. I've tried a lot of people's home wines, and again, they're fun. They're enjoyable.
I'm glad
that people are handing them out as Christmas presents. They're thoughtful. It's something that you participated in. I'm completely for it. I love it. As a matter of fact, Francis and I did a show about it a few years back. But please don't think that you're going to make Stag's Leap Cabernet because you have grapes from Stag Leap's vineyard.
Well, and those grapes weren't harvested an hour ago, which is what you need. If you had a winemaking facility and some of the most talented winemakers in the world to make that wine. And can we tell you something else about any great vineyard that makes their own wine? They harvest grapes, and you'll often, when you read about the harvest of the grapes, you'll talk about the sorting table and the sorting of the grapes. When they sort them, they don't say, here are the best grapes.
Here are some really good ones that we can juice and put in a box and send it to New Jersey so they can make wine from it.
And we'll take these second best grapes and we'll use them to make our Stag's Leap wine. It's a ridiculous idea, and the man should stop saying that. Because, you know, I think having this home winemaking store that gets people involved in making it shows great respect to the wine industry and wine in general. But to say, and we can make wine that's indistinguishable from Opus 1, it shows disrespect.
Can you say indistinguishable one more time?
Indistinguishable.
Thank you very much.
It just shows a lack of understanding, and I think that we don't need to go there. You can tell the truth. It's a great thing that they're doing, and you should go make wine, even at this man's store, but tell him to stop saying that about the indistinguishable. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTCAM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. And today we have an old friend and a special guest, Karen Bussin. Karen's books include the best-selling Simple Stunning Wedding Flowers, Simple Stunning Wedding Showers, Simple Stunning Wedding Etiquette, Simple Stunning Bride, Simple Stunning Wedding Organizer, and now the just released last year, Simple Stunning Parties at Home.
Karen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Francis. How are you guys?
It's great. You know, it took me like 12 tries to be able to say all your Simple Stunning books together without stuttering.
You did stutter a little.
I did.
I was impressed there. That was quite quite a recitation. Thank you, Francis.
Apparently, Karen, you are easily impressed.
So, Karen, why don't we tell you've been on you've been a wedding planner, an event planner. You started as, didn't it all start with the flower business?
Yeah, and actually, believe it or not, Restaurant Guys, it started in the restaurant business.
I knew that.
My flower business was born out of work that I did in a small Italian restaurant, which was here in Manhattan, downtown. And I we couldn't afford a florist, basically. We opened this little restaurant on a shoestring, and I really didn't know anything about flowers, nor anything about anything, really, but I volunteered because I always liked flowers. I volunteered to go to the flower market, which was right around the corner, and make arrangements if my boss would pay for the flowers. Well, he thought that was a deal because he didn't have to pay a real qualified florist.
Uh-huh.
So I would go to the market every day, and for about the first year, I pretty much killed everything that I touched. But, you know, after a while, just like with cooking, it's like you start to get to know and love your ingredients, and you form a kind of a friendship with them after you fight for a while. And people started to notice the things that I was making, and, you know, they would say, hey, who made that? And, you know, we're having a little party at home. Could you help us with some floral arrangements? Or, you know, we're getting married in our apartment or whatever it might be. And so I got the chance to start designing some just, you know, small things for people. And then one night a fellow chef came in to dinner at the restaurant, and that was Rocco DiSpirito. And this was back in the day when he had just opened his restaurant, Union Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw like a giant vegetable trellis or something that I had gotten creative and made that week. And he said, listen, you've got to come over and do everything for us at our place. And that really is what started my business.
And Union Pacific had some of the most beautiful arrangements and decor of any of the restaurants in New York.
Well, as restaurateurs, you'll appreciate this. One of the things that Rocco said to me was that I could have carte blanche. He knew I liked to do strange things with flowers, so I had carte blanche to go into the walk-in refrigerator and take any produce that I wanted, and you would find crazy things in my floral arrangement. One day he came in the dining room. He's like, what happened to my young ginger? I'm like, oops. It's over there with the flowers, you know. But those were the things that really got noticed. And out of that, you know, he obviously had a very interesting clientele who was coming to the restaurant. They would see things and then say, oh, hey, can you come and you know, do some flowers for our party? And that is how my studio was formed and, you know, my party business got launched.
Well, we became friends well after that. But I remember that was the first time that I met you. Was I stopped by with our mutual friend Fred, who also worked for Rocco.
Yes, right,
you were,
exactly.
And I stopped by your studio as you were feverishly putting stuff together. And you know, that was a fascinating and exciting time. Look how far we've come. My goodness.
Well, look how far you've come.
Yeah.
I mean, it has been such a really interesting evolution, and I always describe the business as having truly blossomed, you know. It sort of led me into it, and it turns out, you know, that we went from just being a design-oriented company to not only a planning company when our clients started asking us to, you know, take on helping them find a venue or helping them pick a caterer or find a band. And I found that I really loved the idea of crafting a whole celebration and really, you know, trying to express the vision and the personal style of the person who was throwing the celebration or, you know, in whose honor it was being given. And but then beyond that, having the opportunity to create the books and to kind of share that inspiration is just so much fun for me. Because I love ideas. I mean, that's what everyone says about me. It's like, I just love to sit in the room and, okay, give me something and let's just come up with ideas, you know? That's my favorite.
I think that I want to fill in the blanks for our listeners. It's not just that you're a florist that went on to be involved in these various weddings and parties and has written this book. You're one of the most in-demand and interesting wedding planners, event planners around. You plan events all around the world, right?
We do. We do. Now, we do a small number of events every year, really, and the majority of them are weddings or social events, but we also work on some, you know, one of my favorite events that I've ever designed, strangely enough, is the Legends Gala for Pratt Institute, which is the, you know, world-renowned design school based out of Brooklyn, and, you know, last year, for example, it honored Patti Smith and Marc Jacobs. And, you know, the reason why it's a point of pride for me is because I never went to design school, and I don't even have a college education. So the fact that this design school that's such an inspiration to me, where I wish I had a degree from, actually hired my company to design their design gala in honor of
pressure
design legends.
No pressure there, huh, Karen?
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, What would you say, first of all, I think that is really wild that the Design Institute hired someone who was not, you know, you would think they would look to an alumnus of the Design Institute.
I know, don't tell them that, Brandon.
Right. We'll try and, hopefully they're not listening. Well, that's a tremendous compliment, but I'm always, you've regaled me many times with the stories of the really cool events you've done, and without breaking any client privilege, what's the coolest event that you think, or one of the coolest events that you've designed that you've been able to be a part of and put together?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because I take, you know, I would imagine it's kind of like the same thing when you all are creating incredible, unique meals and events and your wine dinners and stuff in the restaurants. Like, I could say so many different events for so many different reasons. I mean, I have had the opportunity to work on some incredible celebrations. I had the privilege of designing Robert Downey Jr.'s wedding, which was an incredible, you know, small, intimate, beautiful celebration out in Amagansett. And one of the things that was most interesting about that celebration was that it was set to take place in one location, and, you know, I had designed it for about 8 months, I guess, in this location, and then 72 hours before the party, the location changed.
Welcome.
I mean, completely changed to another town.
Welcome to the restaurant business, Karen.
Well, exactly.
Why?
And so, you know, it turned out beautifully, and it was great. So that was certainly a highlight.
I never saw
the location until I rolled up there with my trucks.
I just have to ask in the background, why did it change 72 hours prior?
Actually, there were a number of different factors that were, you know, kind of personal to them, but suffice it to say, it all came off without a hitch, thank God.
Because Karen Bussin was in charge.
You know, but I mean, that's part of actually what I love about what I do. I think if you're going to do what I do, you have to kind of get a kick out of, out of that aspect of things. You have to be able to roll with the punches and stay at least somewhat cool under pressure. But then there's another, when you ask me about my favorites, another personal favorite of mine was this beautiful wedding that we did in one of the great food spots of the world, New Orleans. And I know you guys love New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a wedding celebration, again, kind of small by the standards of the type of parties that we do in terms of the number of people. It was 120 people, a whole weekend of festivities. We did the rehearsal dinner in the French Quarter at a great restaurant. The couple got married in an antique, an old church where actually the bride's parents had been married almost 40 years before.
Oh, wow.
And then we did the reception and a fabulous dinner at this old historic plantation home, which was called the Homus House, which was out in Darrow, Louisiana, just, you know, outside of New Orleans. And that was so incredible. There's actually a picture of this table in my Simple Stunning Parties book. And I set a 150-foot-long dinner table for the reception outside, so that everyone could be seated with the bride and groom.
And, you know, it's a beautiful photo. I know that photo from your book. And you see the house in the background and this big, long, beautiful table. We've done a few farm events. And what were you going to do if it rained?
Well, okay, now see, that's why when you do what I do, you have to have the airtight plan B.
Right.
And in that particular case, our plan B was this location, which we chose partially for this reason, was had an indoor pavilion that could be used. However, it wasn't 150 feet long. It was more like 75 feet long. So I had to completely reconfigure the tables and have a whole other, you know, the bride and her mom were ready to kill me in the last 3 weeks before the wedding because I made them do their seating plan twice. And everybody knows that's no fun. But it was well worth it. I mean, in the end, we didn't have to go to plan B. And, you know, everyone was telling me, oh, Karen, you're nuts because it's New Orleans and it was May and it's going to be like 100 degrees and, you know, there's going to be mosquitoes and it's just, oh, it's going to be a disaster. But it turned out that it was like 73 degrees, you know, absolutely no humidity. I don't know. I just, you know, I dialed up AccuWeather and told them to just give me a break.
I was going to say, so you're a witch as well. You control the weather.
Hey, whatever it takes, I'll invoke whatever magical powers are required.
Karen, I think that's one of the things that I want to talk about. What you're doing in some of these event plannings is you're going out on a limb. You're creating something that can't be created anyplace else and that people are unwilling to create anyplace else because of the work involved and the chance that things won't be perfect for that particular venue, but at the same time you're creating a plan B if things aren't perfect here well, I'm gonna slide here. So in some cases, and in this case here, you created almost two different events just to make sure this one event went perfectly.
Exactly, and that's a very good insight into what it is that we really do, because we spend, you know, everyone who comes to one of our events always says, or at least we hope that they're saying, you know, gosh, it just feels so effortless. I mean, that we don't even want them to see us. We don't want, you know, we don't have walkie-talkies. We don't wear those little wrist things. I'm just not about all of that. I'm really into the idea of, you know, people. I mean, to me, parties are about moments and meaning and experience, and certainly beauty and great food and all of the components that make a wonderful celebration. But it's more about, you know, crafting the energy of the moments and that shared experience. That's you know, what I believe. So, but to actually make that happen for a large group of people, I mean, you know how it is. You know, when they say we get slammed or we're in the weeds in the restaurant business, when like everyone comes in at the same time, well, that's what you have on your hands with a party. You know, everyone's coming at the same time and you are dealing with a large group of people. So we spend all of our time leading up to a big event just poring over every single detail, asking ourselves every question, walking around every corner, looking under every, you know, surface. I mean, I had a wedding a couple of years ago that was out in Greenwich, and the night before the wedding, we're putting up tents, multiple tents on this absolutely spectacular piece of property right next to a lovely lake, and the lighting designer calls me on my cell phone and says, "Hey, Karen, we're doing the lighting focus out here." I'm like, "Great, how's it looking?" "Well, it's looking good, it's looking good." I'm like, "Okay, well, you know, that's awesome. I'll see you tomorrow." He's like, "Well, I just wanted to let you know that one of our lighting techs just stepped on what I think is a poisonous snake. And so I was just thinking that maybe you should know that."
Oh, my goodness. So what happened?
So, here I am. Well, I'm like, well, first of all, I didn't know they had poisonous snakes in Connecticut. Guess what? They do. And, you know, it's like, okay, you have to think of everything. Now I need a wildlife expert to come out and, like, pre-screen my clients' homes to make sure there are no alligators in the lake. I mean, I don't know.
And so I think maybe Francis was wondering if the lighting guy died.
No. Thankfully, I was carrying some anti-venom on me, and I was on the road having a great cocktail, so I stopped by.
You are a party. You are a contingency expert. So what did you do in the case of this party? Did you go and look and make sure there were no poisonous snakes? How did you deal with that?
Yes, we did. We just brought someone out with us the next morning and just had them just go through and make sure that there was nothing untoward to be worried about, and it was all fine. And no animals were harmed in the making of the party.
All right, well, I might add, we're going to take a quick break and come back, but I want to say that, you know, it's interesting. I think that the party planner is about someone who has an artistic flair and a sense of style, but also the mechanics to back it up and actually make it happen. And I think that's really the magic of it all. But when we come back, Karen, I want to talk about your book, Simple Stunning Parties at Home, which hopefully can translate this to some folks for their own use in their own homes.
Sounds good.
We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTCAM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys. We're here talking with our old friend, party planner, author, and designer, Karen Bussin. Her new book, she's the author of Simple Stunning Weddings and the whole series of Simple Stunning Wedding books. But her new book is Simple Stunning Parties at Home, Recipes, Ideas, and Inspirations for Creative Entertaining. Karen, this book is a departure from the wedding planning book. Want to tell us how?
Yes. Well, so, you know, I've written a bunch of books about weddings and those sort of, you know, special occasion type celebrations, wedding showers and all that kind of thing. But the fact is that although I'm not, you know, a chef and not certainly don't have any fancy culinary training, I love cooking and I love, love, love having people over. And I don't know if this stems from the fact that when I was growing up, believe it or not, I feel robbed because unlike, you know, you guys who have a great culinary history, my family was not big into cooking. I mean, my mom was an okay cook, but we lived in Dayton, Ohio, and, you know, we ate iceberg lettuce and Campbell's tomato soup. And that was great. But when I moved to New York and I did a lot of traveling, I just fell in love with food, and I fell in love with that aspect of gathering people, you know, around the table, or just having them in your home and, you know, sharing fun and stories and laughing together. So it's always been something that I wanted to do. And as a matter of fact, you know, just sort of as a foray into it, I started sneaking recipes into some of my wedding books so that my publisher would, you know, see, hey, look, I can write recipes.
Oh, that's great.
And I just pretended, oh, well, you know, you need to have a few little recipes in your wedding showers book just in case someone's doing this for their party. And then the next thing you know, I was saying that I wanted to do a party book. And, you know, people are always asking me, well, I want to have this kind of party. What should I do? So when I set out to put this, you know, book together, I didn't want it to be like, hey, look at all the big fancy parties I create for my clients who have parties that, frankly, even I can't afford. You know, I wanted it to be something where this would be the kind of thing you could really do on a Saturday night or after work for cocktails, you know, something that would inspire you and be beautiful, but that you would look at, you know, like with my wedding books and say, oh, hey, you know what, I see this picture looks beautiful, but it's really simple and I could really do that. So I decided to break it down into 12 party themes, and I actually wrote a recipe not just for the food and the drinks but for the whole party, so that, you know, if you want to have the ladies over for a dinner, I've given you, you know, an idea for what to serve but also what kind of music to play, you know, what, how to kind of set that mood with color in your space, what kind of fun conversation starters you could use, you know, at the table, stuff like that. So that's what motivated me, and it's really just motivated by my own selfish desire to have people over and have parties.
Very nice. Francis and I talk about, to anybody who's just starting a restaurant or planning a restaurant, the three things we always talk about are music, lighting, and Francis, what's the third thing we always talk about? Temperature.
Music, lighting, temperature?
Music, lighting, and temperature. You have to talk about those three things. Before you begin a party, you start with those three things, and then you work with from everything else beyond.
It's so funny because I always say that lighting is the best guest favor that you could give any of your guests, because the right lighting makes everybody feel and look fabulous. And what makes a better party than people who are feeling fabulous? You know, nothing. Music, I always say, creates mood. It tells you how to behave when you walk in a room. You know, walk into a room and there's classical music playing, it's like you sort of feel one way. If you walk in and you hear the salsa, you go to the bar and order a mojito. You know, it's like you are crafting mood with music. So I totally agree. And then, oh my gosh, climate control. If you knew, climate control is one of those things, even at events, just like with restaurants, it's like, you know, you're just constantly walking that tightrope. This one's too hot, this one's too cold. You know, how do you manage that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I find in restaurants often when climate goes off, lighting and climate are, you know, great restaurateurs and great maitre d's, people who've worked as maitre d's, are always fiddling with the lighting in your house. Even sometimes they're fiddling with the lighting and the temperature.
Francis just called himself a great maitre d' because he plays with the lighting every time he comes to my house.
What, you know,
all night long.
No, but it's so true. And, you know, actually, that one of the things that I talk about, well, first of all, you know, when you brought that up, the first thing that popped into my mind was the little restaurant that I told you that I used to work at. Those would be two of the things that I always thought were just not right in that restaurant, and it always bugged me because the owner of the restaurant didn't like any kind of music except for classical music. So we were always playing opera, but you know how opera is like eating dinner. I mean, it's hard because like it gets very quiet, and then suddenly it's like, oh, you know.
You know, that's an interesting point, because when you put stuff together for a restaurant or for your party, you want stuff that is not dynamically interesting. So symphonies and opera really are a bad choice. You know?
Because they're active listening. You know, you want people to be sitting and listening to that music, whereas when you are encouraging, you know, conversation and people interacting, what you want is a sort of, you want to richen that tapestry of, you know, just texture and flavor and mood, but you don't want to overwhelm the, you know, the energy of the people.
Well, and I think the other example of going too far is there's Muzak, which is really nothing you would ever listen to and concentrate on because it's crap.
Yeah.
But on the other side, there's music that demands that you listen to it and can't be in the background, but there's plenty of music that is in a narrower dynamic range from a volume perspective that you can listen to that is good music, that sometimes you do sit home and listen to Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong and Billie Holiday and listen to them intently, but you can also have them on and have them not be the center of attention. But if music is the center of attention, I had a guy who used to work on our floor, and he was really lobbying me to play jazz, and we do play jazz in our restaurants, but he wanted to play Thelonious Monk.
Mm-hmm.
And look, Monk is really cool, but Monk takes all of your attention, and it doesn't aid the digestion, and he's not something to play in the background, you know?
Yeah, it's going to upstage the food.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you know, I totally agree. And by the way, never has it been easier to craft, like, a really interesting playlist for your party. As a matter of fact, it's one of my favorite things to do. And I have actually you know, I have spent hours and hours just having fun kind of coming up with moods for music. So if I'm having people over and we're doing like a, you know, really mellow Sunday night supper, I'll do a whole Sunday night supper vibe playlist, you know. And on some of the sites, you know, where you can download MP3s and music, you can even email, you know, the suggested songs of your playlist, or you can embed, you know, little samples of the music into your own little website or whatever. So it's much easier now to kind of craft an interesting selection of music if you don't have already a great big CD collection. You know, sometimes too, when you pick one song, I mean, I guess people have different schools of thought on this, but they can sort of suggest other songs to you that you might like.
I think we've just found another career path for you, Karen.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm waiting for, you know, iTunes to call me and ask me to do a celebrity playlist, because I think I would be great at that.
Except that you're going to give them 12 for the different moods that you'll want to have on there. It won't be just one.
That is true. I do tend to go big like that.
Well, now let's go back to your book. I think the recipes in there are really valuable, and what I see is the theme in all the recipes is these are beautiful, striking, interesting recipes for stuff where all the work's done in advance.
Yes, and I guess, you know, for me, that comes from, again, selfishly, just knowing that, look, I work. I don't just stay home all day and plan parties for myself. As a matter of fact, it's, you know, it could be a case of the shoemaker whose kids don't have any shoes, you know, because I'm constantly working on everyone else's events. So when I have people over, I really am typically trying to source out good ingredients that are simply prepared. And personally, that's kind of the way I like to eat best anyway, unless, you know, if I'm going to a great restaurant where there's a chef who can dazzle me with, you know, artistry, that's great. But when I'm cooking at home, I mean, first of all, I don't have that kind of talent. But second of all, I just prefer to eat more simply. And so along with the recipes, you know, one of the first chapters in the book is, I call it, you know, creating your party pantry. So what I've done, I mean, I live in an apartment in Manhattan, so I don't have a ton of space. And so I just took like a simple shelving unit and I turned it. There's actually a picture of it in the book. If you want to see Karen Busson's actual party pantry, you can flip to that page. But I keep things for entertaining in that party pantry. And, you know, like the first thing that I always recommend to people is platters, big platters and plates and bowls. Because every time I go over to someone's house, that always seems like the thing that we don't have enough of, you know, when we're trying to put food together. So, you know, I tell people just get things that are in materials that you really like a lot. You can mix things together. I mean, setting an eclectic table is really cool. And so find things that you like or find them on sale, or when you travel somewhere, great, get a piece, put it in your party pantry. I keep different, you know, interesting glassware for fun cocktails. And I always keep plenty of, when you're talking about lighting, plenty of white, unscented candles of all kinds. So
now, I just want to interrupt right there. Talk to me. I feel that if you're having people over, unscented candles are that scented candles are an anathema. I don't.
But it's like having music that's too dynamic. It's the same, exactly the same principle.
Would you agree that scented candles have no place in a party?
Absolutely, I completely agree. And you know, it's like it's one of those things where all that I want a candle for at a party is just to create that, you know, that soft glow. I don't want the smell. First of all, scented candles. I mean, it's really hard to find a scented candle that actually smells good, in my opinion. And I'm sorry out there to all the scented candle makers. But that's just how I feel.
I agree.
I'm going to say we don't have a ton of scented candle maker listeners.
Yeah. You never know. You never
know. I'm going to get hate mail from scented candle makers. But
but even if it smells nice, it's obtrusive.
It's true. And, you know, yes, and it's just like we were saying with the music, you know, it's competing with the flavors or the smells. Like, especially, you know, hey, we're wine people, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't need anything other than the smell of something that is roasting in my oven, or some, you know, bacon on the stove, or some, you know, a great bottle of wine to make me happy and please all my senses. So absolutely agreed. But if you keep lots of different shapes and sizes of white candles, it's great because you can just bring them out. They go with everything. You don't have to worry about, you know, matching a particular color. And even if you have no other decor, you have no flowers. I even say that to my clients at the big parties that we design. Lighting, 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 most important thing. If you can't afford flowers and lighting, pay for lighting.
Hey, Karen and Francis, maybe we should invent a baking chocolate chip cookie candle.
I think they have them, Mark.
Do they really?
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I think, I think so.
Sorry.
I know they have, like, pumpkin pie.
Yeah, but it doesn't smell like pumpkin pie. Everybody get over it. Yeah.
And how about just bake a pumpkin pie?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Hey, all right. So, but in your pantry, you also talk about having non-perishable things that if you need to whip up a party at the last minute, you know, people coming over after work, that you have nuts and olives and things like that in your pantry.
Right. Well, because the thing is, like, you know, I know, okay, if I decide I want to have people over, and, like, if you just go to the grocery store at that point and you're standing there at the entrance of the grocery store, you're like, oh, my God, I have to have something when they first get there. I have something for when I sit down. I got to do dinner. I need wine. I need this and that. Well, if you just stock up on things that, you know, you could use as little nibbles, you know, great breadsticks, as you said, olives, nuts, you know, just little things that you can keep around for a longer period of time, flatbreads, you know, great olive oil. Then when you're on your way home or the day before the party or whatever, you know, you can stop and just get those fresh things. Go to your farmer's market that week and, you know, add to, you know, get your lettuces and get your, you know, whatever it might be. Go to your great fishmonger and get your fish. Like, do the things that you need to do at the last minute, but, you know, if you're prepared and you have your little arsenal of fun things, you can even use it to inspire you. Like, I typically, you know, I have a lot of white in my party pantry, and then I always try to, like, go with an accent color or two for, like, the season or the year. And so I'll have some great cocktail glasses that are, like, right now I'm into, like, black and white and other fun colors. Like, I have some really beautiful teal glasses. And so then, you know, I'll just, like, look at that, and I'll think, oh, hey, how do I want to set my table? What have I got right now? And I actually use my party pantry as it's like decor in my living room. I display the fun things that I have. And, you know, that's what I encourage people to do, too, is, like, use the things that you have. If you've got a nice set of china, don't wait for Christmas. You know, just break
mm-hmm.
it out
mm-hmm.
and use it, because that is what it is for.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned platters and things like that. One of the centerpieces that's in my living room almost all the time is a big, square, very pretty platter that I put either fruit in or something, in it, just something simple in it that we literally use every day, but yet it's a centerpiece to my home.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's like, for me, when I'm thinking about how can we do, like, something that's simple and not even, you know, too expensive but is also fun, you know, I will I'll go and I'll get, like, let's say for the Latin spice cocktail party that's in the book, I did a welcome kind of centerpiece for my foyer that was just on a wicker tray, and I filled the tray with red chili peppers, and then I put some candles, you know? And so now you just have this thing that's like, hey, it's kind of cool. It fits with the theme. It brings some nice bright red into, you know, my color palette. And it's something that then, okay, after the party is over tomorrow, I can use the chilies and make something with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I want to touch on one other thing in your book that you deal with being a guest as well as having parties yourselves. I love your suggestion for host gifts or hostess gifts. You want to talk with us about that?
Yes. Well, okay. So, you know, for me, I mean, whenever I go over to someone's house, I always want to have something to, you know, to bring. And so I tried to come up with a few things that that are easy for me to make that, you know, I could offer either to people who are coming to my house or if I'm going to their house. So I love stuff that is, you know, either it's like a fun thing that you can use in different ways. Like I make, you know, a cherry syrup, for example. And you can make it with fresh or frozen cherries. And it's really just like making a simple syrup, but with the fruit. You strain it, cool it down, put it in a fun little squeeze bottle with a little hang tag. And, you know, give it to your hostess and she can use it. You mix it in with maple syrup for pancakes. You can squeeze it over ice cream. You can put it into a cocktail if you are a cocktailian like yourselves, fellas. You know, so something like that. Or I'll do, you know, a salt scrub or a sugar scrub with rosemary or lavender, where you're really just taking, you know, sugar and or coarse salt, mixing in a little bit of oil, a grapeseed oil, for example, and then giving it a little perfume with fresh rosemary or lavender or, you know, or whatever you like. So I do have some great suggestions for those type of things, or a little spice rub, you know, where you're just mixing up your favorite spices, because that's great, and that's something that people can really use and enjoy.
You know, one of the things I think that you stress in here that's really great, I like the party pantry where you have stuff that's ready to go, so in coming up with a party, it's not like you have to pick up everything when you say, oh, let's have some folks over.
Yes.
And I like the idea you talk about how
have a supply of gifts to give for people when they invite you over to their home.
Yes.
Because they don't go bad, and mm-hmm. if you have six of them, you're all set, and you don't have to think, oh, I'll go over to the house, I have to stop by the store on the way there and pick up something because I don't want to...
You mentioned something in the book, Karen, that my mother always had, and that was a catalog of the basic cards. Happy birthday, congratulations on the engagement, happy wedding.
And, you know, it's so much better if you just go to, you know, the card store, and you just pick out, like, you know, a couple of cards for every possible kind of occasion. And then this way, when at the last minute you're like, oh, gosh, I have to go to my friend's birthday party tonight. Oh, well, I happen to have a couple of cute cards here, and I can just roll out the door. It does really, if you take the time to just organize yourself a little bit. And I did that with my gift wrapping, too. I mean, I'm not crazy. I don't have a gift wrap room, you know, but, like, I have a little basket where I have a scissors, tape, you know, some paper like that. So, you know, just so that I am ready to go. And I'm also always, I don't, you know, you don't have to hand make everything. I love a handmade gift, personally, as long as it's good. But I also find interesting things. Like, I found this company recently that makes wine stoppers. So this company is all about recycle, reuse, you know, renew. And they make wine stoppers out of old doorknobs.
Interesting.
So they take those old kind of fun, you know, like either the cut glass or just, you know, all sorts of different materials of doorknobs in all different shapes and sizes, and then they put corks on the end of them, and they're called knob stoppers.
That's crazy, because there's also a company that makes doorknobs out of old wine stoppers, which is really, that's...
Francis.
Now, but no, it's, but the point is, though, when you're at the card store,
yeah.
it is as easy to buy a dozen cards as it is to buy one.
Exactly.
And if you buy a dozen, you save yourself 11 trips to the card store. And the same for hostess gifts.
Not to mention, like, you know that stress that you just feel when you're like, I'm already late and I have to stop and get them a card. And then you're like, for me, I know, I had one too many times where I was literally wrapping a gift, like, in my car, and I had to buy a scissors at the card store because I didn't have scissors to wrap it, you know. So I just, like, was like, this is enough. You know, I gotta do a little bit better than this.
And I have one more bit of advice. There are two kinds of cards that you should have in your desk all the time. You should have some sort of card that is just, and it should all be plain, because whatever the card says inside, it this is what it really says. Happy birthday. You know, and there is zero sentiment that comes with picking out the card that has the verse in it. Just, I think most people are much more happy for a plain, nice-looking card that says, Happy Birthday, Karen Buston. You know, Merry Christmas, Mark Pascal. I'm sorry for your loss, Francis Schott. You know,
honestly, I could not agree with you more. And I really think, like, whereas, okay, I am a person who's all about making things, okay, as Albert Einstein himself said, you know, things should be made as simple as possible, but not any simpler. And the fact is, there are just certain things that should be done right. And to me, it's like, you know, we send out wedding invitations for the celebrations that we're doing. And, you know, people don't even send back the postage paid stamped reply card that has a line on it and a check mark. You know, they can't even check off the check mark and stick it in and send it back, because we've become accustomed to everything having to be just so instant and easy. And what we have to remember is that what celebrating is all about is connecting with each other. And so for me, I think even more important than, you know, a blank card with, like, a picture on the front of it is really nice, just personal stationery, something that comes from you, that, you know, has your name on it, or is just something that is, you know, expresses your own style, and writing that thank you note, you know, a personal thank you note. I mean, an email is fine if you just went out for a drink or something, but if you take the time, I mean, who gets an actual handwritten note anymore?
I think it's one of the things, Karen, that I really enjoy about your style, and this, you know, is pervasive in all of the things that you do, but it's that it's personal, and handwritten notes are personal, and the style of your parties, it's personal. It's designed by you. It's designed for the person that you're throwing it for. Email has made us very impersonal, and I think that it's nice to have a little handwritten note or a little design for a party that's personal, and it's personal for that event or that person.
Right, and I mean, not to take away from, you know, the convenience or even the fun of so much of what we do that is like social networking or emailing or whatever, because we all enjoy that stuff, but it does not take the place, nor is it even, you know, It can never be a substitute for what we really want, which is that we want that personal connection with each other, you know?
And, you know, you can make a personal connection by dropping someone an email, but, and because most people do that, I think that it stands out more than ever. It's a really nice thing to do now because it's so uncommon. When you get a handwritten thank you note from someone, you think, wow, oh, how nice is that? And you remember that. If you get an email saying, hey, thanks for the party last night, it was fun, it's sent to you in a minute, it's forgotten in a minute, and it was, I guess it was good that you sent it to know that, so that we know you got home safe. But, and if you have, if you go and buy either personal stationery or a stack of thank you cards and just keep them in your desk with postage and envelopes, it's as easy as it takes 2 seconds to write a little note that says thank you, and it has a huge impact. And I think, you know, a lot of the stuff about your parties and your wedding planning is choosing the small things that have the big personal impact like that. And
yes.
I think it's great.
Well, it's interesting because when we first get to know our clients, that is the first, I call it a strategy session, you know, which is like a real get to know you, where we sit down with everyone who's a decision maker, about the party. Let's say it's a social event of some kind. Maybe it's, you know, the parents or it's the bride and groom, whoever. And we all sit in a room and I ask them questions, you know. I'm like, so, what do you people think about music? And boy, oh boy, the discussion, you know, they find out things about each other that they didn't even know. And pretty soon we're like, well, honey, I never told you this, but I really just don't like Norah Jones or whatever it is,
really?
You know. And so then we're able to really, you know, listen and to do exactly what you just said, which is, and that is our goal with every party that we create, is to hone in on what is so personal and unique about this person or this group of people that we could bring to life at this celebration. And that's what we do, it by listening.
Well,
you know?
Karen, thank you for coming on the show to talk about your book. The book is Simple Stunning Parties at Home. From the most recent discussion, we should look for Simple Stunning Family Therapy by Karen Bussin. It will be coming out very soon. Thanks a bunch, Karen. It's been great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks, guys.
You can find out more about Karen Bussin at KarenBussin.com or at RestaurantGuysRadio.com. And you can find out more about us by staying tuned. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTCAM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. Karen Bussin, cool lady. Great books.
You know, she's always done these great weddings and these kind of fabulous parties with beautiful senses of aesthetic in little spots that you don't really notice but are definitely there.
Yep. They have a huge impact.
But now she's doing the little parties at home, and I think it's not that hard to come up with a few of these little things that can make your party at home really, really nice.
Well, you know, it's funny because Karen does some of the you know, super high-end weddings and events. I think her Simple Stunning Wedding book is very useful. Perhaps the most useful of all is the Simple Stunning Wedding Organizer.
Mm-hmm.
Because in planning a party, what you're afraid of is what you've forgotten, you know, and to know what you don't
right.
know. And I think that, you know, she's very clear about there's sort of not everything is necessary. You don't have to use every idea. I mean, I watch that show on cable once in a while.
I don't even know what show you're talking about.
Bridezilla's.
Never seen it.
Comes on late night sometimes. And, you know, it's frightening. People have this idea that this wedding has to be perfect and there's so much riding on it. And
well, there's so much pressure going into a wedding and wedding planning. It's self-imposed. I think that we as a society impose that on ourselves, that our wedding has to be just so.
And, you know, there's also... there's this idea that there's this big important thing and I don't have any idea, so I'm going to throw everything at it. And, you know, I think the two books to read, the two, if you want to learn how to plan a wedding, you should pick up for the other side of the coin is One Perfect Day, which is a book written by a wedding planner who's been on the show, and she talks about, you know, people talk about these traditions, and they'll sell you things as, well, you have to do the tradition of this, and they're like, well, did your parents do that when they got married? No.
Right.
Did your grandparents do it when they got married? No. Then it's not really your tradition. It's
right.
It's not a tradition.
Well, that's, you know, Karen said earlier in the show, well, they got married in the church that their parents got married.
That's a tradition.
Right.
Ding, ding, ding. That's a tradition.
So I guess what I want to say is when you're getting married, when you're planning that big event or anniversary or whatever it is, and these are types of things that we talk about with people who do events in the restaurant too, is try and find things that are real and get rid of the stuff, frankly, and the expense of the things that aren't real, of the things that aren't going to matter to anybody or are based on something that's false, based on something that, hey, well, everybody does that, so I have to do it.
The wedding industry will try and imbue with a sense of gravitas, you know, the unity candle. Well, the unity candle's only been around for about 20 years, okay? So it's like, well, everyone, and you think about, look, jumping over a broom, that's tradition. Okay, that has historical precedence if that's your culture. But the Unity Candle was made up by the Unity Candle Manufacturing Company 20 years ago. I'm exaggerating. But
again, if that symbolizes something to you that you really like or like what it symbolizes, then that's great. But don't do it because everybody else does it.
Or because you feel you must, because it's not a real wedding if you don't come out with these traditions. There are things we take from our family and our tradition, our ethnicities that are traditions. And there are things that we do because we think they symbolize a great thing. But I think people are too often feel obligated to include certain things in the course of a wedding. Mm-hmm. And I think and then often feel like, oh, well, I've forgotten this stuff, or people won't think I've done it well. And I think if you take Karen's books and Karen's ideas and The Organizer, and you read One Perfect Day to give you a better perspective on things, you can really create your own party that has meaning for you and save yourself a lot of money and heartache along the way. So I hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.